So good evening and welcome to this investigation, this continuation of our book club. I am calling this Guarding the Sense Doors in a Digital Age. And so what I want to talk about are the visitors that come through to our sense doors from screens of various kinds. And so I want to put this in the context of our book club before I get down to that specific piece. So our book club is exploring the hindrances using Gil Fronsdale's book, Unhindered. And Gil defines the hindrances as forces in the mind that can make it difficult to stay attentive to one's present moment experience. So this is a very useful definition as we talk about distraction and screens. So I'm going to repeat it. Forces in the mind that can make it difficult to stay attentive to one's present moment experience. Okay, so we know that there are five hindrances, and we've been on the first hindrance, which is desire, for quite a while now, and we may stay there longer. So desire is not necessarily a problem. The challenge comes when desire leads to clinging, to grasping, to wanting something to stay or wanting more of. So desire, when it leads to clinging, always leads to suffering. So I'm going to repeat that. Desire, when it leads to clinging, always leads to suffering. Do we believe that? Is that your experience? So I'm going to be asking a series of questions through this talk, and they're really for us to reflect on individually, and then at the end we'll open it up and share any reflections that we might want to share. So even wholesome desire, if it leads to clinging, also leads to suffering. Have you had that experience? So, as we read at the beginning of chapter 4 in Gil's book, quote, an important aspect of the path to the end of suffering is becoming wise about harmful desires. This is not easy when desires operate in a way that masks the suffering they cause. So again, this is a very useful sentence or framework to think about what happens when we're involved with screens, and we'll take a look at that in a minute. So one aspect of reflection and practice around desire and clinging is focused on guarding the sense doors, which is something John talked about. So there are six sense doors, the eye, the ear, the nose, and then the organs of taste and touch and mind. So last week, 2 weeks ago, John reviewed with us the rich and varied teachings and the similes of the Buddha on the effects of the senses on mindfulness and clarity. Tonight, I want to look specifically at the effects of our screen contact on our minds and our mindfulness. So this is obviously a huge topic, and I'm going to touch on some things. I won't touch on everything. And the other thing I want to emphasize is that I'm not out to demonize screens, and I'm not out to defend screens. What I want to do is investigate the effects of screens in our lives. So I hope I can I can hold to that standard. So you may be thinking, yep, this is an area of concern for me. And you may be thinking, I'm not really a screen person. So this doesn't have much to do with me. So first of all, let's start by thinking about how many screens might be in your day from the time you got up this morning to this evening. How many screens are in your life delivering information, and how many screens are in your life in which you're creating or sending out information? So I made a partial list of things that are, most of them are in my life, some of them I know are in our lives. So many of us have a cell phone. There's one right here recording this talk. There's a screen right in front of me. And on our cell phones, we have a keypad, which is how we call. But we also have a clock, and we might have a weather channel, and we might have a calculator, and we might have a flashlight, and we might have our list, and we might have a calendar. We might have an insight timer in which we use for our meditation. All of those and many more things are on our phones. And then we may have tablets, and we may have watches, and we may have laptops. And on that, we may get news, and we may get email. And we may have an e-reader. We may be reading books. We may be seeing videos. We may be watching movies. We might be gaming. War of Witchcraft or Witchcraft of War. You know, anyhow, who knows? We may be creating documents. We may be creating spreadsheets. We may be doing graphics. We may be making videos. We may be making games. We may be watching movies in a movie theater. We might be watching something on TV. And then there's all these other miscellaneous screens. There's flashing billboards as we drive. There are now screens on gas stations, which deliver a very odd version of the news. I mean, I was just thinking about what it would be like to be the star of a news program that got like shown on gas station pumps, you know? It's like, boy, it's not what I planned to be when I grew up. We may be using debit cards and credit cards and using screens to input and receive information. And then, of course, many of us still work, and more of our jobs are focused on screens. What happens in our jobs takes place on screens. So if you think about it, there are probably many times in most people's days in which information is coming at you and you are sending information out via a screen. Now, some research shows that we touch our phones 2,000 times a day. Obviously, this is a wide range, and I'm guessing very few people, maybe no one in this room, touches their phone 2,000 times a day. But when you start counting, if you actually have one of these things, you may be surprised at how many times you touch your phone. I told my husband this, and he goes, oh, that's ridiculous. I think teenagers touch their phones 20,000 times a day. And I was like, I think you just have to leave your hand on your phone the entire time. But anyhow, there are a lot of screens and a lot of contact. So most of this screen time takes us out of the present moment. And in fact, that is often what we're hoping. We are hoping to be distracted from the present. We want to be distracted. So, but distraction, I just want to step back a minute. Distraction is not clearly unique to a phone or to a screen. There is distraction. A Dharma teacher said, we don't just react to things outside us. We ourselves are continually creating distractions. We cook them up and keep them going. They are our companions or pets. I was talking to Mary Stone, who had come back from a nine-week retreat in England at the Gaia House with Christina Feldman, and I was telling her about this potential topic, and she said, you know, screens aren't the only cause of distraction. She said, there were no screens at the Gaia House, and I can tell you that I got very distracted. And I said, so how did that happen? And she said, turnips, the smell of turnips. You're walking along, you smell turnips, and you go, turnips smell. But then you go, I hate turnips. It's like, is this going to be dinner? And then there we go on the whole food thing. Or someone's breathing and you hear it. And there you go. Christina Feldman, who Mary sat with, was giving a Dharma talk. And she talked about sitting on a retreat and sitting near a window. And it was spring and the window was open. And she heard the chirp of a bird. And, you know, the first time you hear the chirp of the bird, you go, hearing chirp. She said, but it wouldn't stop. And every time I sat down, it was chirping. And I started to hate it. I started to hate the chirping. I was wondering how to stop the chirping. Clearly distraction. And so I'm not saying that if the screens weren't in our lives, we wouldn't have distraction. What I want to look at is the increase in the possibility of distraction in this world. So with that as, oh, I just wanted to say one more thing, because I, you know, one of the great things about doing a Dharma talk is you get to like look up all this stuff, you know, using screens. Although I read this in the Shambhala Sun. So there's a Dharma teacher who said that the Sanskrit word for a distraction is vikshepa, and then it's spelled different ways. But anyhow, she defined it as vikshepa. Distraction arises when the natural flow of sense perception is joined with and tainted by our emotions. So what she's saying is it's not the arrival at the door of whatever sense it is, whatever sense door it is, but our reaction to it, the emotional flavor that we paint, that's the distraction. And so I just thought that was kind of interesting. So, all right, so with that as background, why I think it's an interesting topic, I want to start by thinking about the word guard, guarding our senses. I want to do something else. Okay, I want to talk about guarding our senses because it's such an interesting word. So I started to think, well, what does a guard do? A guard decides on the safety. Let's just say a guard at a gate, you know, medieval gate, looking at people. A guard decides on safety. Is it safe to let this in? A guard decides on appropriateness. Is this the kind of thing or person we want in? The usefulness, will this person, this thing help us? Is this a friend or a foe? So the guard stops some input. The guard allows other input in. A guard can also decide when to let something in. So sometimes there'll be a guard at a gate, something or someone comes up, it's a go, they go. But sometimes borders are closed. I mean, I just was in Blaine. The two out of the three borders up there are closed from midnight to 7. So there's nobody going through there. A guard has that option too. So a guard isn't necessarily a stopping. A guard is discernment. So what we're talking about is discernment at the sense doors. So I'm going to read you a sutta. This is called the Facebook Sutta. And it's what got me started on this little jag. So this sutta comes out of Bodhi College. Bodhi College is a college that's been created in England by three Dharma teachers and many other associates, Stephen Batchelor, Christina Feldman, and John Peacock. You may know these people, you may have sat with these people. And they're interested in Theravadan teaching, early Buddhist teachings, applied to a secular age. So they're really looking at how do these suttas connect with our life today. This sutta was written by a student of John Peacock's, who is a Dharma teacher himself. And it's called the Facebook Sutta. So I'm going to read it. It's in stanzas, as suttas are. And I'm going to pause at the end of each stanza and just let you feel it, see what you think. And then eventually we'll have a chance to talk about it. So, I just want you to know I'm seated at the right hand of the Buddha in a very traditional way. So, okay. Thus have I imagined. At one time, the fortunate one was staying in Silicon Valley. There he addressed the bhikkhus thus. "Bhikkhus, venerable sir," they replied, "these things should not be cultivated with regards to Facebook by one who has gone forth." "Which things?" "Thoughts of greed, thoughts of aversion, ignorance of filter bubbles." One who has entered the Eightfold Path does not engage in individuality view posting, nor crave for likes, nor has the conceit, I share. I'm going to read the last sentence. One who has entered the Eightfold Path does not engage in individuality view posting, nor crave for likes, nor has the conceit, I share. Bhikkhus, when an uninstructed person senses a post with his device, which is an advertisement, a TED Talk, an impressive headline, thoughts of greed arise in him. Why? Here, bhikkhus, an uninstructed person, gives inappropriate attention to the signs of instant magical solutions. Thus, when an uninstructed person senses a post with their device, which is an advertisement, a TED Talk, an impressive headline, thoughts of greed arise in him. Is this true for you? Bhikkhus, when an uninstructed person senses a post with her device, which is a rant, an alarmist article, an impressive headline, thoughts of aversion arise in her. Why? Here, bhikkhus, an uninstructed person gives inappropriate attention to the sign of fatalism. Thus, when an uninstructed person senses a post with their device, which is a rant, a catastrophic article, an impressive headline, thoughts of aversion arise in her. Is that true? Whenever an uninstructed person goes online, Mara stands beside him. Bhikkhus, when a noble disciple senses a post with his device, which is an advertisement, a TED Talk, an impressive headline, he reflects thus, this is harmful. It leads to craving, to renewed frustration and seeking. It obstructs wise action. It takes away freedom. Here, bhikkhus, seeing much danger, a noble disciple gives appropriate attention to the sign of unsatisfactoriness. He is filled with thoughts of contentment and applies himself to the training, diligent, clearly comprehending, and mindful. Bhikkhus, when a noble disciple senses a post with her device, which is a rant, an alarmist article, an impressive headline, she reflects thus, this is harmful. It leads to anger, bitterness, and despair. It obstructs wise action. It leads away from peace, right speech, and freedom. Here, bhikkhus, seeing little benefit, a noble disciple gives appropriate attention to the sign of unsatisfactoriness. She is filled with thoughts of friendliness and applies herself to the training, diligent, clearly comprehending, and mindful. When going online, a noble disciple is careful to abide in the appropriate pasture. The life of the device holder is dusty, full of filters and notifications, but life gone forth is wide open. This is what the fortunate one said, and the bhikkhus delighted in the fortunate one's words and shared them on social media. So I found this very interesting, somewhat provocative. I liked it a lot, actually, and I sent it to Lee Brazington. So Lee Brazington, as many of you know, is a Dharma teacher. Many of us have sat with him. And so I said, Lee, I think you'll find this interesting. And he sent me back a reply almost immediately and said, this is fabulous. I'm going to post it on my website. And I thought that was a joke. But the next day, I went on his website, and there it is, a link to the Facebook Sutta. So it's quite available online. I mean, I can send people the link if they want it. But
I'm posting it on Facebook tonight.
Yeah, many people are and have been. All right, so that was the article that piqued my interest in this whole idea. And so what I have now are a series of kind of questions for reflection. And so I'm going to read them, and we'll take a couple breaths, then I'll read the next one, then I think we'll sit for a few minutes, and then we'll just see if there any reactions? So, reflection question number one. John and the Buddha, John last week and the Buddha for 2,500 years, have suggested a question to consider is what are proper and improper pastures? So thinking of screens and sites as pastures, how much time do you spend in a pasture that might be considered helpful or wholesome? And how much time do you spend in a pasture that might not be so wholesome or could actually be harmful to you and possibly to others? So proper and improper pastures. Number two, what are the advantages of the screen time that you do participate in and the disadvantages? Remember, we're not trying to demonize and we're not trying to defend. We're looking at the big picture. So advantages, disadvantages. What is your intention with each screen contact, with each site that you visit, with each button that you push, with each finger that you swipe on our various touch pads? What is our intention? Do we even ever think about intention? I mean, I'll just say for myself, rarely. For example, what do you expect to gain or understand or do? Is your contact mindful or mindless? So, intention. What is the result of your contact? What does your screen time nurture? Does it nurture happiness or does it nurture suffering? Does it nurture freedom or does it nurture enslavement? What does it nurture? What does the process of screen time nurture or produce? And so when I think of nurture or a process, I'm thinking of the kind of the whole physical piece, like what happens to your body as you sit there. I mean, most of this is sitting. It's possible you could be walking, but as you sit there, what happens to your body? As your eyes move, what happens to your attention span, your heart space, the quality of your attention, your mind space? One of the questions you can ask is like, what is the effect on my sleep? That's another process. But so there's a whole process piece in screen time that I think can have effects, and some may be helpful and some may not. Okay. Gill says that the guarding of the sense doors includes limiting sense contact and avoiding sense contact. Would you consider limiting your screen contact in the whole variety of screens that we use? And would you consider avoiding any kind of screen time? Just avoiding, not limiting. So Mark announced this talk last weekend online, and so people knew this could be a possibility. So I got an email from one of our Sangha members last night. And it said in part, "Would you be willing to share your talk with me at another time? I really need to guard the sense doors when it comes to screen time. We, my partner and I, are going to set a bedtime alarm so we have an hour without screens before bed. Speaking of which, time to log off." So there's a person who's already considering the limiting of in a family unit, not just self. So, all right, so those are questions for reflection. So our practice is about developing and nurturing a stableness of mind, a calm abiding. And more than that, it's a means so that this stability we can use to investigate the restlessness, the unsatisfactoriness, the difficulties of life that will continue to arise, even with radically decreased screen time. But in order to investigate, it seems likely that a stability of mind is useful. And so the question is, how does screen time support or decrease our opportunities for a stability of mind? And would any changes in the way we use screens support and nurture changes in our heart, in our mind space, in our practice, and our interactions with ourselves and others? So that's sort of the picture that I, or the questions that I've been thinking about and I wanted to share with you. So what I'd like to do is just to take a few moments of silence and then sort of see what resonates with you, what irritates you, what just is you just seem clueless about, and we'll see if anybody wants to share. So let's sit for a few minutes.